Hey everyone, how's it going? My name is Matt Mendoza, and this is Across the Table 26. My guest this week is podcaster Marcel White. He is on the Brainstorm Brewery podcast, and he's a financial guy in terms of magic, although he is a pretty good player in his own right. I'm really excited about this episode because we went deep on some topics, and he turned some questions on me, which was a little surprising. Anyway, thank you all for listening and for being patient with my crazy release schedule. Next week we'll be back to normal in terms of Thursday at midnight. I'm finally settled in St. Louis. It took like a month, but you know, that's what happens when you start a new job a week after you come back from a trip, and then you stay on a couch, and then you come back to go on another trip, and then to move, and then having to find an apartment, and etc. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, and here we go.
Pregame.
I'm drinking tea. That's my drug of choice, I guess. You mind tell me what you had for lunch today?
I had a pork belly sandwich with an egg on top.
With an egg on top?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the other thing about Gen Con. I don't know if you've ever been, but the food trucks are amazing.
Yeah, I didn't actually check out the food trucks when I was there. I went, not just last year, but the year before. And I'm probably going to go this year.
Yeah, it was a trip. It was my first Gen Con, and I haven't gone to like a lot of cons, like in general. So I'm a newbie when it comes to that stuff. Played Magic for 16 years though, so been to a lot of tournaments.
Snack cons.
Yeah.
What'd you like about it?
Oh man, just the excitement. Like everybody is just excited, and then just gaming all the time.
Gotcha. 24 hours of gaming.
Yeah.
What'd you end up doing most of the time, or what was your spiel?
Oh, well, my job was to follow Ogre around with a camera, so that's pretty much what I did. Shot B-roll when I wasn't. I managed to get some cool video of like Sam Black and Helene Bergeau and just the people that were in the Celebrity Sealed event.
Nice. So you didn't get to play much, sounds like.
Nope. I actually bought tickets for a draft, but the way everything was going to pan out, I was looking at getting interviews as well. So I wasn't sure what I was going to do. So I just ended up giving my draft, my 15 tickets to somebody else so they could draft for free.
Ah, nice. Yeah, when I was at Gen Con, I did a bunch of interviews, and that just was consumed most of my time. I just had a lot of fun doing that. It's like I didn't want to do anything else.
Yeah, it's like when you have to, I mean, it's like a chore. No, not a chore. It's just time consuming because you have to ask them for interviews, and then you have to like my setup requires an actual table for two people and a plug-in, which is like a nightmare. So we ended up like in the Card Fight Vanguard section, like in this really like far off corner, with like my mixer was like plugged into the wall, that like all 10 feet of cable were stretched as far as they could go. And I had to like during my second interview, I had to throw a chair over the cable so people would know that there was a cable there.
Sounds like you need some longer cables.
It's true. I'm adding a stinger to my setup. So I don't know if you know the term stinger. It's a film term for extension cord.
A stinger, yeah. I do. I work in a Yahtzee in San Francisco, the local stagehand union.
Oh, so okay, just, cool. You know,
yes, I heard stinger. Stinger is definitely terminology.
So, Marcel, what do you do?
I'm a stagehand. So, but I do right now. I'm focusing more into video engineering, AV work, stuff like that. So they'll set up the conventions. The convention comes in, I'll be the person, your AV guy, your AV tech.
Okay. Cool.
And set up the projectors and whatnot.
I guess I should introduce you. I'm here with Marcel. Marcel, what's your last name?
It's White. Oh, you started the interview already.
I kind of do that.
Okay. Not a problem. Yeah, my last name is White.
Okay.
Marcel White.
And you're an Oakland fan. I'm pretty proud to be a Chiefs fan right now.
Oh, yeah. I'm an Oakland A's fan, Oakland Raiders fan, Golden State Warriors, because they're all in Oakland.
Yeah.
We got the acronym RAW. Oakland is RAW. We got the Raiders, A's, and Warriors, R-A-W. So, you know, until one of those teams move, that's what we are. We're RAW.
So are you the type of fan to, like, sit in the black hole, or do you are you more, like, you'll just wear a Raiders shirt and go to the game?
I wear a shirt to go to the game. I love the black hole. Black hole's got an energy that you can't get anywhere else. Like, you go to the black hole, you feel the heart of Oakland. It's just pulsating. And it's quite a lovely experience when you go there.
And oh, yeah. Oh, it reminded me, like, fan sections like that remind me of, I mean, I'm from Lawrence, Kansas, and we have a pretty good basketball team, the University of Kansas Jayhawks. And our student section is insane.
Yeah, it really makes the game. Like, to me, that's what it is. I'm not really a big sports fan, to tell you the truth, especially as I've gotten older in life. Like, I just don't have the time to keep up with sports like I, in order to be good at it, like, and follow the players and follow the teams like I want to. My interest has waned for sports. I used to be real big in it when I was a kid. And so, like, you know, my girlfriend, she's an avid Niner fan, and she'll make fun of me. You're not a real fan. You're not a real fan. I'm like, yeah, I'm an Oakland fan. I could care less what goes on. They could go 0-16, and I'm still a Raiders fan. You know, that doesn't matter to me. It's hard, but it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the same way. I just it takes so much energy and time to be a good quote unquote sports fan. You know.
Yeah.
And I just enjoy the game. Like there's the story there that it's a contest. I mean, you and I both being avid Magic players and competitive players, it's like we just appreciate the competition.
Yeah, and I've learned, like, actually Magic has replaced that whole I find Magic, you know, more entertaining, and I get more out of it. And the time I invest in Magic, I would have to spend that same amount of time into sports in order to be such a good fan. So I just, like, yeah, I gotta pick my battles.
Yeah, and one pays off a little bit more than the other one.
I will never be a pro sports player. I might long stretch could get on the pro tour.
So Marcel, where are you from?
Born and raised in Oakland, California.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah, I haven't traveled. I live in San Francisco right now, which is across the water, about 10-15 minutes away. There's a bridge that just got built, but yeah, I've lived in the Bay Area in California my whole life, and I don't see myself really moving.
Okay. In the words of an Oaklander, is that what they call you guys?
Sure.
What's Oakland like?
Oakland is...
I've never been there, so...
Oakland is a rough city. And there's no way... Oakland has a lot of culture. Oakland is a proud city. Oakland's definitely a blue-collar city. Oakland has a lot of ghetto going on. But Oakland has a lot of pride and a lot of, you know, things that happen, cultural relevance. Like, you know, the Black Panthers were founded in Oakland. There's a lot of labor movements going on. So Oakland has a strong sense of who they are. And in the Bay Area, Oakland's notorious. Like, you know, people are like, oh, I don't want to go to Oakland. I'm not going to get shot in Oakland. But, you know, I mean, Oakland can't be bad, and Oakland could be really good. There's a lot of good art. There's a big art scene going on. They got this thing called Art Murmur, which once a month they shut down several city blocks, and they got this art shows going on and people in the street, and there's a lot of fun. There wasn't violence. There was a couple shootings, but they're more isolated. But just the fact that people could come together in Oakland and have that great thing is actually kind of rarity nowadays, because the kids nowadays are just so crazy and there is a lot of shooting that goes on. But I mean, Oakland's got a lot of good things going on. So they call it the Brooklyn of the Bay Area, where San Francisco is like the Manhattan, where the prices are so crazy.
Oh, okay.
Where a lot of the artists and a lot of the people might, you know, go to where you can find the real people at. So, you know, that's kind of in a nutshell how you would describe Oakland. When you were
growing up in Oakland, did you like aspire to move to San Francisco?
No, this is because work. I work in San Francisco. I would never lived in San Francisco. My girl that I'm with right now, she's from out here. She did a year in Oakland and she couldn't stand it. So,
why?
She got into it. She's a confrontational, so she got into some conflicts with people and she kind of blamed it on the city. But there's other things that went in. She just doesn't have the best outlook on Oakland. So I tried out here and it's actually not bad. It's good for my commute to work. So. And it allows me to see Oakland from a different lens. When you live there, you don't see it as what it is. And now, looking out, I can see, it's a little crazy over there.
I mean, what's San Francisco like from someone who's from Oakland?
Oh, San Francisco is like a sardine can. There's so many people. There's so much going on. San Francisco got whatever you can get into. They got every shape, form, or fashion of whatever you're into. They got it there. They got a culture. They got people that are in it. You can find a community, whatever it may be. So that's the good thing about San Francisco. The bad part is there's a lot of people that come from out of the state. So you'll see people in San Francisco that say they're from San Francisco, but they're really from Idaho or Wyoming or Nebraska. And they come out here and they're like transplants. And there's a lot of gentrification. So you're seeing neighborhoods change in San Francisco, even throughout the Bay Area. And a lot of that's kind of sad. It's just cultures being lost. But I mean, it's the ebbs and flow of what happens. San Francisco is a world class city. It's not New York by no means, but it's like a mini New York, and there's a lot that goes on, and there's a hustle and bustle. So that's kind of cool about it. But all in all, it's not my cup of tea per se.
Really? Okay.
I like a little more laid back. I like to be able to think a little bit, and here it's kind of just always on the go.
Oh, okay. That's funny. Being such a progressive city. And also so laid back, or so not laid back.
Yeah, well, I mean, compared to other parts of the country, I've heard that we are, just in general, Californians are laid back. So, I mean, maybe this is my own internal perspective, but I guess from the outside, we're probably more laid back than general.
Oh, okay. Marcel, I will not lie to you. When I first heard your voice on an old episode of Brewport Avenue, I believe it was.
Monday Night Magic?
It was either Monday Night Magic or Brewport or
I don't think I've
Brainstorm.
Been on Brewport. Yeah, I would love to jump on there sometime with the guys, but I haven't been on.
Okay,
there.
It must have been Brainstorm then.
Okay.
I thought you were black.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do. This is, again, that's the Oakland. Oakland is a very chocolate city.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a lot of the people I grew up with were either Latin or black. Those are pretty much my close circle of friends.
Okay.
So it's just the way that people talk out here. It's just how it is.
Cool. And do you do, this is such like a question that I have to ask, but it's obvious there. You have a great radio voice. Like, do you do any voiceover or radio work or other than podcasting?
I do not. Something I should look into. I'm just fairly busy and I don't know how lucrative it would be for me. So it's something I would want to pursue. Maybe I got to talk to the right people, but you know. I do hear that I have a good voice, and sometimes when I edit, I'd be like, okay, that's not bad. I could do something with that. So something I would have to explore.
Okay. So let's go way back. When did you first discover magic?
This was back in, I believe, middle school. My brother, he was into the game a little bit, and he kind of got me interested. He had a group of friends back then. He was in seventh grade. I was in eighth grade, and they would play magic, and then I started to pick up a couple decks, and he would play with them at the house, and it was like around revised, so
okay, long time ago, 18 years.
So I didn't get to know all the coolness of the. I mean, I knew about the Black Lotus, and it was so valuable of a card, and all these other things. But you know, I'd buy packs here and there from LGS, and I sticked around with the game till about like Homelands, like. Just, I realized at a certain point you needed to have X amount of money to be able to play the game.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I don't have X amount of money, and no, it's not worth it for me. So I decided to give up Magic at that point.
Okay.
But, it was a great game. It was a lot of fun, just all the stuff, and whatever I was playing really wasn't Magic. It was some form variant of Magic, but it had Magic cards in there.
Yeah, I don't know if you had this experience, but I remember damage not falling off. Like, we always used just tons of dice to keep track of damage.
Yeah, like you had Infect or Wither.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I had the same thing. And there's other... Oh, I can't remember. I tried to look back and think of all the dumb stuff I did, and it's hard to remember at this point. I should have wrote it all down. But yeah.
So you're from... this will tie in eventually, believe me. What's your background like? Like, in middle school, were you... You were from Oakland, but were you from, like, the quote-unquote hood? Or what kind of neighborhood did you come from?
I mean, I'd say in Oakland you got the ghetto and you got the hood, and then you got other parts of Oakland. And yeah, I lived in the hood. I never lived in the ghetto, so it was a rough neighborhood.
What were you like when you were a kid?
I mean, I was a nerd, but at the same time, I tried to be cool. So I mean, the people I hung out with were you could say gangsters, or you know, of that element, were necessarily unsavory people. And some of the stuff that they did rubbed off on me, and I was always a Dennis the Menace. I always got in trouble with school.
Okay.
And I never was like a, like, people would rob people. That's something that I would never do. I'd never cross that line, but I was, you know, I would do like shoplifting and graffiti and stuff like that. So I wasn't the best model character, but at the same time, I was a nerd the entire time. So it was kind of a weird combination.
Yeah, what was that? What's that like, living that double life as a kid?
It's not really a double life. It's just more of...
I mean, like, when you started playing Magic, did your friends like kind of make fun of you for it, or?
No, I mean, yeah, you could say that could be kind of like there's groups of friends that you do different things with different people, and like, you know, if they didn't like Magic or they didn't like certain video games, I just didn't play with them. I played with the people that liked it. So, I mean, you could kind of say that's a double life, but it's more just choosing your audience per se. And okay. I mean, I enjoy just doing different things. And I mean, yeah, I mean, people made fun of me and you know, joked about, oh, you're a nerd for playing this game. But I mean, I could care less, you know. Sure, back then it was a little bit more of an issue, but as I grew older, I realized, like, you just do whatever you do to have fun.
Yeah. What did you try to do to fit in?
What did I what?
Try to do to fit in.
I think me being bad was part of the way of me trying to fit in, saying I'm not just, you know, I like doing bad things. I don't know. There's times I followed certain kids that were not necessarily my best friends, but I thought they were friends. And, you know, I would do certain things with them that weren't in my best interests, hoping that I could gain friendships, I guess.
Okay.
And so that would be my ways of fitting in. I mean, I was like the, you know, in Oakland, there's only very few white kids. So that was like a constant. I always heard about that. White boy this, white boy that, white boy that. So I almost kind of felt ashamed of me being white, but I learned to embrace it. So at a certain point, I could feel that I was trying to act black or trying to act Mexican or whatever. And I could see, look back, that was there. It wasn't my intent, but I could see where people got that perception.
Okay.
So I think maybe that's where I was trying to fit in.
And you come from a white family?
Yeah, I come from a white family.
Okay.
Jewish and Irish.
Quite so the background.
Stingy drunk.
So, like, you're this white nerd who has all these kind of gangster friends. That's just kind of cool.
Yeah, it's I mean, it definitely gave me an edge. I think that nowadays I can capitalize on my friends, say what I grew up with and people I grew up as friends, and you know, my nerddom at the same time. I think it comes across. I get the voice and the way that I talk from that, and so I think beneficial. And just as I moved on into business, like, a lot of things you learn on the streets, you can say, translates pretty well to business, like as far as tactics and whatnot. So, like, I won't say it was a waste. It definitely helped me later on in life. It's not something, like, I wouldn't hang out with my older self nowadays. Like, I wouldn't hang out with my younger self as I am. Just because, yeah, I wasn't necessarily the most savory of characters.
And when did you discover that you were a nerd? I mean, you mentioned knowing, like, back, and you mentioned that you were already a nerd. when you discovered magic? How did you know that you were a nerd?
I think I've always was placed in the nerd label just because being a white kid.
Okay.
Kind of like that. And I just, like, I always liked games. I always, like, when I was playing elementary, I'd, you know, just run around and I was goofy and, you know, I never took stuff too serious. And I was always playing around. It was, and I liked fantasy. Like, my dad exposed me to Middle Earth role playing game early on. Just, like, stuff like that spoke to me. I liked Zelda, you know. So, I guess I wasn't proud of being a nerd, and that's something that I think later on in life comes about. But that's how I always was. It's just what I could classify it at the time. I probably didn't classify it as being a nerd, but now I look back, that's how I would categorize it.
Well, yeah. Did you see yourself as very different from your friends that you would hang out with?
No.
I mean, all of the groups.
I had different groups of friends. So I had friends that were nerds or, you know, nerdier. And then I had friends that were of the criminal element and had other friends. So, I mean, that's one thing I was good at, is being able to cross the different divides of who they were and, you know, be myself in this circle. But, you know, you don't have to give everyone everything, you know?
Yeah.
So it just didn't seem like being a nerd was a big deal. I mean, I'm sure it was, but being a nerd was irregardless as being white. White was more of the issue. So
okay.
It could be being a nerd had no issues. That was like not really a big deal.
And you mentioned school troubles. What kind of troubles did you have in school?
I mean, I got suspended. I almost got expelled one time.
Was it all like disciplinary type stuff? It wasn't like, I mean, you sound like a smart dude.
Yeah, I mean, I got sent into a gifted and intelligent education early on. It's like a program they had for more smarter kids, I guess. I mean, I've always been smart, and that's one thing that I pride myself at. But yeah, being smart doesn't mean that you act good. Like I like getting in trouble. I like just doing things that kind of broke the rules, and to me, that was fun. That's how I enjoyed life. It was just being Dennis the Menace. However you could break the rules, however you could do whatever you're not supposed to, you know, just something about that just appealed to me.
And when did you finally like start to grow out of that? And what did you realize about that behavior?
It took quite a while, actually. I mean, the big change was like near high school. I went to juvenile hall for about 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And during that time, it allowed me to think about where I was going, what I was doing, what I wanted out of life, you know, and everything. And that was more of a crossroads. Like my grades were really bad before then. I got like 0.0s at some point. But in order to get out of they were going to send me a camp for 6 months. But in order to get out, I was like, oh, there's this program that I wanted to get into a different high school, change of pace. So they gave me the opportunity there. And so once I got the opportunity there, it was an arts academy, which was basically a sub school within the school. So it focused on teaching arts and, you know, your creative skills. Mm-hmm. So I got into that program and I decided to, you know, just grab the bull by the horns and started getting 3.0s and really applying myself. I mean, I still was bad at school, but I made sure I took care of my schoolwork. You know, I never got anything below a 2.0 ever since then. And
how old were you then?
I was 16.
16? Well, that's a lot of growing up to do, like on at that period of time.
Yeah, I mean, it. I would not have been the same person. I would have probably, I would have probably been in jail or something dumb. You know, if I would have kept doing what I was doing. So, yeah, I mean, looking back, I'm glad I made it, the choice, and it put me in the right direction. It took me a few years to realize, I mean, as an adult, I wasted a few years of my 20s up to like 24, 25, just partying, having fun, bullshitting, really not doing what I should have been doing to get myself set up for the future. And then eventually I went on just going to school, to college, and I think college really just put me like, I gotta take care of business here without playing around. I gotta make sure I take care of this. And from that point on, I've been very more professional, trying to take care of what it is and say shed my past.
Okay. And when you went to that arts school, what kind of caught you?
The girls. I was like, yeah, I'm in a room with 10 guys and 20 girls. I cannot lose here. Yeah. I mean, I've always liked arts. That my dad and my mom, they had a background in art, and that's their focus. They did. And I've always done art pieces as growing up. I always drew, always painted, always did that. I never really was that good. And there they had different ways that you can go in it. And I particularly liked, they had a silk screen press. And like that was like, that called my name. Like I was like, I need to do whatever I can to start printing my own t-shirts. And and that kind of got me really, you know, pushed in that direction. And I embraced it a lot from that.
And what did you do with that?
I printed it as soon as I could. It took a year. We had to be in the program for a year before we even had access to it. As soon as I had access, I came up with a t-shirt for the junior class because they got class t-shirts for every class. And I did not, me and my friend, we did not like with the one for our class. It was the juniors. And we were like, no, let's make our own. So we made our own and tried to sell it. And we did okay. It was actually a really horrible design looking back at it. But we did it. We printed up the shirts. We got it going. We started selling them. And from there, I started doing, you know, more and more t-shirts here and there. And I just got the ball rolling on that entrepreneurial side of me.
And what did you discover about yourself, like, through this entrepreneurial process?
That, what did I discover?
I mean, obviously, you discovered your entrepreneurial side, or unless you had figured that out earlier.
I kind of did, not really. Like, I've sold pet rocks on the street before, kind of, and that was an interesting business. Like, I never really, I was always, like, bullshitting, honestly, and that kind of put a little drive into me to that you can apply yourself and, you know, make some money off of what you do and see your, you know, your ideas come into fruition. And I mean, that sparked it. Cause like, as I moved on later in life, there's many different business ventures I've done that involved like around that kind of, you know, t-shirts or that whole aspect of the entrepreneurial. So it sparked that for me. And I found out that was like, you know, that's me. Like I got, you know, I got ideas upon ideas. I just don't got $1 million to make them happen. But, you know, that has never left me. I'm always thinking of ideas to start a business or something like that. So that's just been, it grew into part of who I am and my identity, I could say.
And what do you like about being an entrepreneur?
I like being in control of your own destiny. You know, I have a problem with authority. I just do. So, yeah, I like
all authority or just
in general. I mean, I understand the need for rules and regulations, and I'm not a libertarian or nothing like that. I believe, you know, and I believe that. But at the same time, like someone going around telling you what you need to be doing and this and that and that and this, I have a big issue with that, you know. And people coming across as condescending and that they're better than you and trying to tell you what you need to do and putting down what you feel that you can bring to the table. They're like, I just don't want to be in a position where someone's in that type of person is in control of what I'm doing. So that kind of just really spoke to me.
Okay. You kind of grew up and you kind of grew up with magic a little bit. Where did magic kind of fit in your life? Like, did you play during that time that you were in juvie or?
No, I've always I left magic alone, like back in like Homelands or Homelands. But I've always like Inquest was a magazine I loved, and I would read it even if I didn't play Magic. I just wanted these new cards, and Magic was always cool. And I mean, I bought a few packs from here and there. Like I had some Prophecy packs, and I think Meridian Mass, and some other packs I bought. But there's this, I'd never really played it because I kind of just wrote it off. But I always liked Magic, so it was just say on the back burner. Okay. Like it was a cool game. Maybe one day I'd pick it up, but I kind of just mostly wrote it off from me playing it because I thought it took too much of a time and investment, and I was right. It does.
Now, when you say that, do you mean to say that like early on you realized what it took to be successful in the game, or like you wanted to be a competitive player and you realized what it took? Or
I didn't know what competitive was until like later on in my second Magic life, you could say. So that was definitely never a drive. It's just because you want all these cards and it costs so much money. And my family wasn't necessarily well to do off at the time, you know, so money was tight and there's other things. And I realized like you got such and such amount of money. If you can't buy all these cool cards and you're just playing with these crappy cards, it's like the fun's not nearly there.
Okay.
I guess I spent more time playing video games at that point. I decided, you know, I could spend, you know, buy a video game and get more out of it. I don't know. I don't know exactly what was the key reason, but I just realized that Magic was going to cost me too much money for me to be involved in it. And it was better for me to get out instead of having to invest all this money that wasn't going to do much for me.
Okay. And then going to that time when you're in the arts high school, when did you rediscover it?
I didn't rediscover it until Ravnica.
Okay. So that's about 2004?
2007 years ago. So what, is that 2006 or 2005?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, it was quite a while, actually, after high school. I saw my brother and my friend. They were playing, and they had a guild mage out. It was a Dimir guild mage. I can remember it now. And he didn't mind. My brother was playing a dredge deck, and I was just looking at it like, I've never played these cards, whatever. They're playing Magic, stupid guys. They know how bad that game is. And then all of a sudden, I saw, you know, the hybrid symbols. I'm like, what is this? This is two colors? Oh, it blew my mind. And then I saw him dredge like a stinkweed imp.
Okay.
And my floor, I had to pick my job off the floor. I was like, you can use your graveyard as a resource. Like, I flipped my top, and so I got right back into it after that. Like, that just brought me right back into Magic. I'm like, this is too awesome. So I think I got on the tail end of Ravnica and the start of Guild Pack, and like, what was it, Wee Dragonauts? Like, I had
that.
And just like, oh, yeah, I'm in, full vested. Magic, I love it.
Now, what was different about your life then? Did you have a lot more disposable income? Because you graduated high school, and what did you do after that?
After high school, I partied a lot.
Like, okay.
Yeah, too much. That's all I did. Like, I was a bum. I was at home smoking a lot of drugs, drinking a lot, partying, going out, having fun. Not really. I would work. Like, I started working outside of high school, but then the economy went bad with September 11th, and so we were off for like a year, and I got a bunch of unemployment, and I just partied with my money from unemployment. And I kind of got to the point where I'd just rather just play video games, hang out with my friends, not do anything, work a little bit here and there, but just enough to get by. And yeah, I was just a general bum at that point.
Okay. And did you, when you say smoke a lot of drugs, I'm assuming you mean something more than marijuana.
Oh, no. I never smoked anything other than marijuana. No.
Okay.
But I've experimented with other stuff, and it just wasn't for me. But, you know, that was never part of my life.
Okay. And when did you turn around? When did you kind of come out of that phase? And why?
I was engaged, and then I wasn't engaged. She had another batter up to swing, you could say.
That kind of
gave me a little motivation. That's when I was finishing up and going. I was finishing up junior college, and so I went into a 4-year anniversary. So that kind of just gave me a little bit more of a push, and I just kept the ball rolling. So I had to cut off, you know, all the dumb stuff I was doing. And I realized, you know, maybe part of my partying and not taking life serious was part of the downfall of that relationship, even though it was for the best for me that the relationship ended. But still, you know, I took ownership with what I could have done better and how I could apply myself, and how me being a bum is probably not that attractive to your significant other. So that was probably a kick in the butt. And just I understood that I was getting too old for this. Bullshit.
And you said, you mentioned you went to junior college. Like, what inspired you to do that? I mean, what inspired you to take that step to stop being a bum and to start going to JUCO?
I don't know. I can't pinpoint it. It is my ex kept nagging me that I need you to go. You need to get a degree. So I did that kind of to appease her. But then when I went to school, I felt good about myself. I liked learning. And I liked expanding my knowledge, and that spoke to me. So I just wanted to do as much of that as I could in my attention span. And I guess the ball starts rolling and it just picks up steam. And then I got through junior college. It took a while to get through junior college. I was on the 3 or 4 year plan.
Me too. Mine was three. So.
But, you know, I mean, it's everyone comes of age. Like, you know, I'm actually glad I didn't go right into college or 4 year right outside of high school, because I would have had a totally different degree, and I don't think I would have took it as serious. So, I mean, my life took me on this path, and that's kind of what happened.
And you mentioned your love of learning. How does that kind of fit into that growing out of being a bum? Like, were you just not sating that part of your mental appetite? And when you discovered that, like, that kind of helped you come out of that, or?
Yeah, I felt maybe I was just leveling up. Like, I always was interested in learning, and, you know, like, I had friends, even though they weren't, you know, unsavory people, they, like, we would sit down and watch the History Channel and things like that. Like, I've always liked, you know, expanding my mind and doing it, and just, I guess, taking that and applying it and then getting grades where I know this is tangible and I could take this into creating this degree. I guess I felt like, you know, just leveling up is what I needed to do.
And when did you figure out what you wanted to study, and what did you decide?
I didn't figure that out until I got to the 4-year. I kind of bounced around several ideas. I wanted to be an architect. I wanted to get into economics, and then the business was speaking to me. And then I wanted to go to Cal Berkeley. And in order to get Cal Berkeley with my GPA, I was talking about doing rhetoric, which just so I could get in there so I could have a Berkeley degree. But then I decided against that, and business smoked me. I went into business administration. Accounting and marketing is the degree I got it in at BSN.
Okay.
And that, so like, once I realized that I wanted to do something business because of my entrepreneurial spirit, and I wanted to be on top of my game and figure out what I needed to know so that I could rely upon myself and not a team of other people to control my money and tell me what I needed to be doing.
Yeah. And what happened after college?
I went back to work for my union that I worked for, Stagehand Union. I went to that right out of high school, and I wasn't necessarily the best worker there. And I took a sabbatical at one point to take a sales job for like a year and a half so that I could focus on school. And they were supportive the whole time. And when I got out of school, the economy was shit. You know, it's the middle of the crash, 2009. So, like, I was trying to find work, and it was just really bad. And yeah, the union I worked for, they didn't want to. They thought I was going to leave them because I was going to school. But then I started to stick with them, and they started paying me correctly. And the rest is history.
Cool. And what is it about that kind of work that appeals to you?
I like it because
it's very different from entrepreneurial type of ventures, it seems.
Kind of not. Like, there's a lot of, when you go on the job, you have to, every job's different. So you got to figure out what needs to be done, where are the tasks, what do you have, what can you make happen with what you got. I mean, yeah, it's not very entrepreneurial, but I've scratched that itch plenty of times, and I just feel like there's a puzzle. And I'm a puzzle guy. I like strategic games. I like, you know, tactics. And that's kind of what, with this job, you got to figure out the puzzle, get it done, knock it out. And, you know, and there's a lot of learning. Like, I do stuff, and I've been exposed to stuff that people could wish, you know, they could do. I mean, I'll work on a concert. Like, I just work outside lands recently, and I'm, you know, doing cable pay. Someone's doing the video. They got the camera, and I'm holding their cable so they don't trip over themselves. Well, it's not that intensive. So I'm sitting in front stage watching these concerts that people are, you know, standing behind the barricade for hours, and I'm there getting pictures of the artists. You know, I can go backstage and see the artists. It's no big deal. Like I get exposed to this whole different world that a lot of people don't get to see, and so I feel privileged about that. And I really like that. Like, there's a lot of professionals that I work with. Like, we are regarded as one of the more professional stagehand unions, the IAC unions in the country. New York is probably better than us just because they get more Broadway. But okay. we're definitely highly regarded, high work ethic, and the people I work with are professionals. They instill, you know, a sense of pride, and there's always, you know, so I like that aspect of it, and the aspect that there's always something else. Like, you think you reach one level, but you could always take your skill set and learn something new and go to the next level. And it doesn't feel like there's a ceiling as some people will have with their jobs. So,
gotcha. That's what I like. Story time. What is the most awesome experience you've had at your job? And what is the least awesome experience you've had at your job?
I could put that in the same job. It was The Matrix 2 and 3. This was back in 2001 before the crash of September 11th. So the money was rolling in. It was
okay.
The first job I had, I was getting paid really well, but I was a manual laborer. So it was awesome there because I worked on the set. I got to build pieces. I actually got to spray paint some graffiti in one of the sets that I got to see on the movies. So that was like, I love that. That was awesome. But at the same time, we had this one task. They built a 2-mile freeway. So they built this. Okay.
No, was that for scale. The like famous scene with the bus and like the two white guys fighting?
Exactly, and the motorcycle and all that. That was an actual freeway they built. They even had a couple overpasses that were made out of steel that can hold the truck. But all the walls were basically 2x4s, spray painted with some plaster.
Plaster.
So a bunch of plaster of this. So they literally had to put it all together. So what my job was as the laborer with the few other people I had, they had a big warehouse. They had a stack of plywood, and they would spray paint a primer on there. So I'd take it on my little hand cart, go off into into the warehouse, and then drop it on the ground, and then come back. And by the time we laid down the entire warehouse of it, the first one that we dropped off would be dry. So we'd pick it up, and then we'd come back and stack it up into a stack. So then they could go put plaster on it. Well, after about like 2 days of doing that for 12 hours a day, my knees got locked and it was quite painful. And then I continued doing that task for about another 2 weeks. So that was probably the worst job I've had. Well, one of the worst, and it just was quite painful. But working on the Matrix was great. So it was a 2-for-1.
Cool. that's awesome. Let's kind of talk about magic a little bit. Where is magic in this whole little period of you rediscover it in college, right?
Yeah. Early, before, I think right when I started junior college, or when I was bullshitting in the beginning of junior college, that's kind of when I got into it.
Okay. And what kind of has it been for you the whole time? I mean, obviously you haven't quit since you've started again, right?
Yeah, I haven't quit. To me, it's a great game. Like, it spoke to, like, it was Magic Online that really kind of hooked me in because it fit into my schedule. Not really, like, you know, play groups out here are kind of hard to come by. So to me, it was perfect, and I could play all these decks, and I learned all these new strategies that people were playing. So it was like, it taught me how much Magic has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
So I always constantly like to challenge myself. I like building decks. Like that just speaks to satisfies my soul. So being able to do this on Magic Online and playing all these different decks with Magic, it just spoke to the tinkerer in me. So that's where Magic came in. It just felt like, you know, it's filling this void that I wasn't getting in certain games, that I felt that Magic did a better job of doing that. And it just slowly over time just kind of took over, where other games aren't as fun and I play a lot more Magic than maybe that's healthy.
So when people ask you what you do on the weekends and you've gone to a Magic tournament, what do you tell them?
I say I go to a game tournament. I try to give them the basic information, and they inquire a little more. I'll dive in a little deeper and see if they know anything about Magic. Because all I want to do is talk to people that I talk to about Magic.
Have you kind of hidden it before?
No, never. Like, okay. I mean, there's times that maybe I would be embarrassed that there's a really cute girl or something. It's not something I don't want to bring up. And I don't want to be like, oh, yeah, I play a lot of Magic. But, you know, like, for the most part, very, very few, rarely would I ever feel embarrassed about it. I mean, besides, say, playing a kid's game and, you know, working with professionals and the older adults, and they're looking at you like, you play what? But other than that, like, yeah, it wasn't really a challenge.
Yeah, and you're kind of into, well, kind of along those same lines. What does your current girlfriend think of the whole thing? Think of, like, your obsession?
She calls me Geek Squad. And
okay.
And this and that, and nerd game, whatever. She's just playing around. She's just poking at me. But, yeah, I mean, she thinks it's nerdy as hell and makes fun of me and makes fun of the podcast. But it's in jest, and I could care less, you know. At this point in my life, I really could care less.
No, it seems like, Marcel, you're pretty deep into it. Have you thought about making it a career, or are you satisfied with what you do as a stagehand and you're just satisfied with Magic being a hobby? Where do you think that this is going for you? Because, I mean, you speculate a lot. You organize this podcast called Brainstorm Brewery, and that you do weekly. And working with the people that you work with, there's a lot of wrangling, it sounds like. What do you want to do with it?
I'm still trying to ask myself this. Like, I do want to get on the pro tour. Like, I've been getting better competitively. I can play at a decent level. There's still quite a bit I need to learn, but I do want to get there. But with my job and everything, I really don't think I can. And, you know, like my girl, like, for me to do that, I would have to probably leave her to get that going. And it just... Yeah, I don't think my life will. I could try, but it would have to be through Magic Online for me to get to that point. Like, if I can't do it through Magic Online, I'm probably not going to do it any other way. It's just not going to work. So I'm trying to figure that out. So I mean, maybe one day I could get there. Maybe, but that's probably a long shot. And Brainstorm Brewery, you know what we're doing with that? Like, I've always just wanted. The community is awesome, and I just wanted to be more involved ever since doing podcasting on Monday Night Magic, and it just really spoke to me. And the more I got to know the community, the more I wanted to be part of it and just be a positive influence. So, you know, we're figuring out what we want to do as far as our brand and where we're going. We're starting to get writers on our website, and I might actually start doing a couple articles. So that's. We're seeing if that's going to be the direction we want to go as far as being content producers and in that aspect and hosting. I never really would be a dealer, a trader, because I think that just I don't. Yeah, it just for me to put that kind of time is not going to pay enough, or it will, but it just doesn't speak to me. I mean, again, I don't want to make it a living because I enjoy it as a hobby.
Yeah,
I'd rather have my job and kind of magic and be my release to get away from whatever I'm doing. I'd rather have that separation. The same with like cooking. I love to eat. I love to cook, but I would never be a chef just because I wouldn't want that to be my way of making a living so that I'd end up hating it. I'd rather enjoy it for what it is. So.
Okay. And so that's not ever frustrating that like you can't have it all that you want in terms of magic?
Yeah. I mean, I got into the point like a few years ago, I was trying to do too many projects, business projects, and I had big aspirations trying to start up a startup and this and that, and I kind of burned myself out. And over the past couple of years, I've been just trimming all the fat, focusing on a few things, and it's because I came to the realization I can't get everything that I want. You only got so many years on this planet, and if you're going to do anything right, you can't do it all. So I've just realized that, you know, you got to find your lane that you could play and play your lane and do what's right for you. I mean, yeah, maybe I feel a little let down that I could have done a little bit more. I could do a little bit better in this. But honestly, I'm happy where I'm at. You know, I got no complaints.
Yeah. And why magic? I mean, why not T-shirts or some other side thing that you could do to make money?
Well, I don't make much money on magic. I make enough money to pay for my collection.
Okay.
Like I do the finance, but that's just really to support my habit per se and make it as cheap as possible. So I'm.
Oh, okay. Well, why magic? Yeah. Why not? I mean, why magic over video games or poker or Settlers of Catan or? Jet skis or.
It's such a good game. I mean, I got other things that I do, but magic as far as like. Like I've because my time has become so limited and I only could do so many things. I can't play as many video games as I wanted to. I mean, I play a few games here. Like the most recent was the BioShock, big one. Yeah, I play StarCraft. I love StarCraft. You know, there's various games like FTL right now. That's a little indie game. Oh my god, I love that game.
What is it? FTL,
Faster Than Light. It's a little strategy, kind of a strategy shoot where you got a ship and you got your crew and you go around on various random encounters. So it's kind of like a Rogue, if you ever played Rogue, the role-playing game where it was like randomly generated maps and enemies and whatnot. And then it's a shoot fest. It's like $10. If anybody out there wants to play that game, I can't recommend it more than enough. If you like tactics and strategy type games and stuff like that. So, like, I mean, I'll play games here and there, but I just, over time, I don't have the time to invest it, because if I'm gonna get into anything, I'm going to be good at it. And in order to be good at it, I could spend X amount of time in order to hone my skills. And as I got older, I played less and less video games because I got to spend so much time just to get
reacquainted with, say, a control scheme or, you know, the rules of the game. And Magic kind of has been consistent, and it's always interesting. I don't know. I just like everything they come up with, and I like building decks, and I like trying these new different decks. And I feel my skills have been progressing, and I've got so many years invested that, you know, it would be a shame for me just to let it go down the drain and not do anything with it.
Yeah. In podcasting, when did you start? What inspired you to start that first episode of Monday Night Magic? I mean, obviously you didn't start it, but you were just on it.
It was, I kept calling in, and I was one of the listeners, and you know how they used to have questions, and they would play it on there, and then they would answer the questions.
And, oh, okay.
That's where Jack LaCroix got his start. I remember he got asked a few questions, and then he got called in and to be a host. And I was like, you know what? I want to do that. You know, I want to get on Monday Night Magic, and I want to be a host. You know, something about that, really. I love this podcast. This podcast is amazing. I'm trying to call in and talk about all these different topics whenever I can. Why don't I jump on? So I jumped on, and it took a little while to get my feet together and really, you know, get myself situated and figure out the ebb and flow of podcasting. But it just always spoke to me. And at a certain point, I didn't have time for Monday Night Magic because of work.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of went away, and then Tom left, and so there was a separation of everybody. And so Brainstorm Brewery came in. I wanted to do more podcasting, and Monday Night Magic was no longer a home for me. I got told, you know, whenever you want to come in as a guest with us, anytime you can. And when I heard that, I was kind of heartbroken. I realized that, you know, I lost my place there, and I just needed to find a new home. And that's where Brainstorm Brewery came in. And
what inspired that?
I put a tweet out there. It was Oreo Corporation, Arthur Pendina. He actually, I said, yeah, I want to start up a podcast talking about brewing and, you know, finance, because I always liked finance. Finance spoke to me. I never really dived in deep into it.
Okay.
But, you know, I try to support my collection, do my specs there. So I wanted to talk about that in the podcast. And then Oreo Corp, he said, oh, these two guys, they're looking to do something with podcasts. And he showed me Corbin and Ryan. And so he brought us together. We talked it out. We fleshed it out, and we recorded our first episode. And that was a year and a half ago.
Cool. How has the podcast changed how you interact with Magic? I mean, where it's at in your life too.
Completely. Like, I really didn't know GP, PTQ, PT. I didn't know what the fuck that was. Like, honestly, I could care less. Even when they're on Monday Night Magic and they started talking tournaments, I was glazed over, and I really didn't have anything to say because I could care less. And I definitely am more in tune with what's going on in the community, what's going on with Magic, the changes, the ebbs and flows of everything. So I know what's going on with Magic. I can talk Magic. The podcast has helped me get more into Magic and become a better player. That's what I wanted to do, and just become a better steward of the game, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And like going forward, you haven't really decided what you want to do with Magic. And one question I wanted to ask you, because you're such a public figure, you're rather candid. You don't really hide much, at least to my knowledge, on like your Twitter or your Facebook. And one thing you're very open about is your marijuana use. I mean, do you ever feel like that will hold you back? I mean, how do you feel like that? How do you feel about that? I mean, I personally feel like it should be legalized. It's really not a big deal, but other people may not feel the same way. And those other people you may eventually want to impress.
Yeah. Because of that, and my persona, or who I am and I represent, I guess I would never work at Wizards.
Okay.
And I could care less, like, honestly. Like, it would be nice. I apply for the Great Designer Search, but if I don't work for Wizards, that's not going to be the end of my life. And honestly, like, people stigmatize marijuana in so many different ways, and it's a lot to do with where it stands in various people's states and illegal. In California, like, I could smoke in front of a cop and they could care less, like, mm-hmm. You know. Is, I mean, maybe if you're blatantly bad about it, but they could really care less. It's like, it's not considered, the stigma's not here. It's like, if you go out for a beer or you go out for a joint, it's the same
okay.
thing. It brings, in fact, marijuana kind of brings people together a little bit better, I think. And I personally don't have anything against it. And I think people that are going to have something against it, I don't need to do myself business with them. I handle myself professionally. I take care of my business. Marijuana doesn't get in the way of any of that. And if anything, it helps my business creatively. So if you have anything against it, I mean, I'm not going to miss not dealing with you. I like that.
And let's kind of talk about your entrepreneurial ventures. What kind of entrepreneurial ventures have you gone on? I mean, you mentioned the shirt one a long time ago. That kind of piqued your interest about like what you can do. Like what have been some others besides, I mean, well, magic isn't kind of one.
I've done like various little stuff, but definitely some of the major ones. Me and my friends, we got this company called Blunt World Productions.
Okay.
This came from a party that we did way back in 2001. And it was one of the best parties I've ever had in my life. We have not been able to replicate it. But we started Blunt World there. And it was just trying to play around. So we did through a couple events at clubs, through some parties, had that going for a couple years. So that started to go. We did t-shirts with the Blunt World. And that was a great just experience in general, you know, throwing your own events, you know, hiring DJs, getting talent, getting, you know, just the whole organization. So that was pretty good. And then we left that alone for a few years because it wasn't really doing much money wise. And then one of my friend Jose, he got a fire in his ass, so he wanted to do some Blunt World again because he remembered it from his childhood, or his growing up in high school. So about 5 years later, so we started doing a concert. We did the Blunt World concert, Music Fest. We did that for 420 back 5 years ago, and we just had our fifth one this year. So we've been doing that for about 5 years. Even though now at this point I'm actually kind of done with it. I'm just
How are you done with it?
It's not speaking to me no more. Like the money's not good.
Okay.
You got to be in for it for the love of throwing events and being involved in that type of stuff. And I need to get paid, honestly. And I just kind of grew out of it. And at this point, you know, I'm kind of passing the baton on. I mean, I'm still involved and I'm still invested in Blunt World, and that's always going to be there. But you know, as far as like throwing concerts, it's not for me. I need something a little more concrete and not really on the whims of your customers. I just don't like that.
Yeah.
And then also did I wanted to start a food truck. That was something me and my friend were going to do. We're going to start he's big on tacos and salsas. So we're going to start a taco tamale truck or a food cart and have it at the farmer's market. And so we bought a bunch of equipment, got the ball rolling, but we hit a few snags, lost a lot of motivation. And so that kind of just fizzled. And then I realized how much work it actually goes in. I read Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential and kind of put the nail in the coffin. Like, yep, I am not going to get into food service as my path. Maybe later on, and I got money to invest, and then you know, maybe that way I can get into food service. But at this point, no, that's not what I want to do. It's too much of an investment and too much pain for not enough gain. And there's too much. I mean, I could do well in it. I love it as an art, and I'd rather just keep it that way instead of as my business. So I kind of separated from that. And I got some other ideas as far as like internet companies and stuff like that, a little bit, a much, much bigger scale type of situations, but looking for like, you know, angel investors. Or I was going to try to apply for Y Combinator on a couple of ideas, but that kind of fizzled.
What is that? Y Combinator?
Y Combinator is basically this, it's like an angel investor, venture capitalist startup where they take a certain amount of people that got these ideas for internet companies, and they'll put you through like an intensive 6-week program where you deal with a lot of people that will get the ball rolling, teach you what you need to know how to start your business, and give you money, seed money to start up, and get you, you know, find you to the angel investors. Dropbox was founded there. I believe a couple other places, and it spoke to me. That's something I wanted to do. So that kind of fizzled on a couple ideas I had. I still got a couple in my sleeve that I'm going to pull out, but I've been in this trimming down my fat. So I'm waiting until I get everything taken care of now. Then I'll start the bigger idea plans later down the road. So maybe in a couple years or something.
Yeah. And how do you see this whole Brainstorm Brewery venturing into being a website and doing content? Like, how do you see that fitting into everything? with when it's only if you guys go forward with what you plan to do, it's only going to get bigger.
Yeah, that's going to be the choice. I mean, maybe there might have to be a point I have to step away from Magic. It really depends.
Okay.
Where how I could juggle the plates right now. I mean, it's a plate that I got spinning, and it doesn't seem like it's interfering with anything. And the content, I mean, it could be a point that I could step away, and yet I could still be involved, and it'll run like how I want it to run. So I mean, it's something I got to choose later on. It really depends on my big. If I were to work the job I got right now and not really do any of my big plans, I can totally fit Magic in and it'll never be a problem. But if I try to do some of these bigger plans I got, I may not have the time to invest into Magic like I used to, so I might have to step away. So it really depends on how that ball rolls. And I won't know for another five years or so.
Oh, okay, cool. So we got you for a while.
Oh, yeah, I'll be here. And even if I do walk away, I'll never quit the game. I'll always play, at least at the bare minimum, limited to the day I die.
Now, any of these Magic ventures, have you ever felt like you wanted to quit?
Oh yeah, a few times I get tired. Like there's been times I had to step away from not play Magic for like a complete, you know, set, maybe even a couple sets, and just like, you know, do more limited Magic. And it's like anything you do, you're gonna have ebb and flow. But over time, like you step away and you come back, it's just as awesome as a game. You don't ever quit it. So. You know, you're going to have times that you're not happy with it and times that you want to go away and step away for a couple months. It's not a bad thing, I don't think. It's healthier than just burning yourself out on Magic, because that's something people can do. It's such a thing.
Yeah.
What about you? Do you think you could ever, how do you see Magic in your life?
Oh, man. I think it's a wonderful culture. It's a wonderful world. I'm really happy I live in it. I've played Magic for 16, almost 17 years. I quit for 3 to mainly go to college and just kind of figure some stuff out. But I came back to it in a situation where it was like a winter break and I was home from college. I was feeling really down about myself, and the Magic show with Evan Irwin, I don't know if you're familiar, that actually got me back into Magic, because I kind of discovered it and I was like, oh man, this guy is—he's just doing all these shows. And as I started playing, I feel like Magic for me has been like this thing in my childhood that I latched onto when I was a child, because I started playing when I was 12. And for me, it's been a balancing act between feeling like Magic was the mature choice, the mature adult choice at the time, and feeling like it was the security blanket that I'm holding onto that I really shouldn't be at the time, if that makes any sense.
I can understand that. And so that was your cross point right there?
What do you mean?
I mean, so you're in between it becoming something you had to shed, but something that you embraced as a security blanket, and...
No, I'm actually... Well, right now I'm writing that line. I'm writing the line that I want to, where I want to play Magic and I want to be involved in this world. Like, I love the friends that I've made through it. I love the people that I've met. I love the places that it's taken me. I mean, I wouldn't have this job right now if it wasn't for Magic. I wouldn't have gone to Vegas this year if it wasn't for Magic. I wouldn't have gone to Indianapolis this year if it wasn't for Magic. Like, I think that there's a lot of awesome things that this culture can bring you, but there's a lot of really kind of destructive, immature things that this culture can bring to you.
Indeed.
That are not unlike the negative symptoms of addiction. And I kind of have an addictive personality. Luckily, I've been able to curb most of it. So yeah, that's kind of where Magic fits. I go from like, oh yeah, I feel great. And then sometimes I, you know, like playing a major event at my store when I should be focusing on helping the store and covering it. Like, I had that experience and realized that I needed to not do that.
Huh.
Because playing Magic was getting in the way of my overall experience, my overall healthy experience with Magic.
Hmm.
And I think that speaks to also various personality traits.
So have you ever got to the point where you felt magic? You said you're addictive personality and everything. Was there a point where you knew that it was just bad and you kept going, or?
Well, my last relationship was pretty much destroyed by my inability to control my spending. Because I'm kind of a romantic, and it's really easy for me to live in this like romantic life where money doesn't matter, and you know, it's all about like what you're doing at the time, man. And I remember vividly, like, my girlfriend at the time, well, ex-fiance, would have to buy me groceries because I spent too much going to a tournament. And at the time, I was too immature to really, like, see that as a wake-up call. So I kind of just kept going a little bit. I mean, I wasn't oblivious to the fact that that's what I was doing, but I was being enabled also. Nobody was telling me that I couldn't do this. So that's kind of the unhealthy side of being a Magic player that people can experience. I mean, I like...
What did you do personally to change that around?
Sold my collection and quit playing. Went to college.
A little extreme, but yeah, it worked.
I mean, it was about time, I think. I had that 3 years to really do a lot of growing. That, you know, within that 3 years, the relationship ended. I had moved to a different city to start on a new college. Things were just much different. I mean, I wish Magic had hit me a little bit later, so I could have actually, like, focused much more deeply on the last bit of school that I had left. But it didn't.
So where do you see it now? Where do you see it in your future? What do you want to do, get out of it?
Oh, I just want to live a charmed life, if that makes any sense. Like, how awesome is it that I work at a game store? Like, how awesome is it that you work on movie sets?
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying. You're part of the magic. You're in there.
I mean, you're like, my worst day here is better than my best day waiting tables at IHOP, which was what I used to do. Or being a mover. Or building pallets. Or the really shitty jobs that I don't care about. I mean, that's where magic is to me. It's like, it kind of fits in to this whole living a charmed life. Living kind of my childhood dreams. I mean, I'm a media coordinator for a game store. That's really awesome to say that. And I remember the first time that I told somebody that, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is what I am. And I would love to be more involved with Magic. I'd love to eventually work at Wizards in some capacity. I don't know. That's the weird part about me is I don't know. I don't know actually how smart I am or how dumb I am. I always feel like in some rooms I feel like I'm the smartest person in the room, and in others I feel like I'm the dumbest person in the room. And oftentimes they're the same room with the same people. So I don't know. I don't know. And a lot of my talent is just knowing how to do a lot of things. I'm really good at being good at a lot of things. Like, I know how to produce podcasts. I know how to take a really good picture. I know how to shoot video. I know how to edit it. I know how to work social media. I know how to record this interview over Skype using professional audio equipment. That's kind of where I am. And that's kind of where I see Magic going for me in the future anyway.
How much do you play?
It really depends. Sometimes I'll get a draft in a week, and then some constructed magics. As well as I play in our sealed league at our store. So kind of whenever. And it kind of depends on the work week lately. Like, after the tournament that I played in, which I top 8-ed in, but was still like, I was like, oh no, I need to not, like, it's really easy. It would be really easy for me to just play and just be oblivious to what's going on around me. So I kind of have to curb that sort of thing. So there are weeks that I don't play Magic at all, and there are weeks that I play Magic a little bit more than that.
Okay. But still, most of your time is doing Magic-related stuff.
Yeah, actually. I mean, back when I was in Kansas City, I found myself, there was like a month where I had spent more time on Magic things, like editing podcasts, publishing content, writing articles, website stuff, doing photography, editing photography. I had spent more time on that than I think most grinders spend on magic.
Yeah, if I took the time that I did podcasting and other stuff and applied it to just playing, I'd probably be somewhere a lot better than where it is. And like Mark Rosewater, I think, talked about this in his Drive to Work podcast he did. And if I believe it's right, he says this is the meta, which is a different term to when Richard Garfield created the game. They're talking about the meta where people are involved in the game, mm-hmm. but not actually playing the game.
Yeah,
and that Magic was the type of game where people spend a lot more time not playing the game and actually and involved in just the community of the game. And I think, you know, that's what makes Magic such an awesome thing. You know, just
oh yeah, totally. Potential. Like, and that's what I think ultimately really kind of catches me about it is it's this thing that like brings people of all sorts of from all sorts of places together, and it can be so many different things to so many different people. You can.
Yeah.
Be in the financial side of things. You can be in the flavor side of things. You can be in the strategy side of things. Like that's a really cool thing for a game to do. Like you can't say that about most video games. You know, you can't say that about most games, period.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's part of the reason I really come back. I mean, I don't play EDH, but I like the fact that people are playing EDH and taking, you know, this type of approach to playing Magic. You know, two-headed giant, or you got a Rochester draft, or just they got these same component, these same pieces, but there's so many different ways to consume these pieces, and different people consume pieces for different reasons. And it's, to me, it's like a social experiment. It's very, very interesting. And no, that's why I like talking with people about Magic. I like to see how do they take it? What do they take from Magic? What does it mean for them? Because not everybody has the same story. Not everybody has the same joys or pains from Magic. And just I think sharing those experiences brings people together and just is part of the awesome reason why this community is good. It's just so many different types of people, you know, for different reasons. But one thing that I do see, though, is that most people that play Magic are generally smart.
Oh, you know, yeah, yeah.
There's not a lot of dumb people. There's dumb people. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, for the most part, the intelligence level is higher up. And, you know, that just speaks to me on there because I just think, you know, I'm a strategy. But like one of my favorite games is Final Fantasy Tactics. And, I mean, even though it's kind of simplistic, but just that, you know, beating someone using strategies and tactics and cards. And I just think there's a part of you becoming who you are as a person by doing that. And the same with like decks. You know, if you're control player that likes to stranglehold someone, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of who you are, and I just really like that aspect.
Yeah, and I also think that one thing that you made me think of was like the role that Magic played in my life when I first discovered it. I was into sports cards, and then my dad died, and somewhere around there, I picked up Magic, and the role that this game can play in just helping people escape or helping people live their life without turning to drugs or alcohol or, you know, violence or whatever outlet they choose to express their pain or whatever they're going through at the time. The fact is that, like, a game can help with that. Like, that's just a reality. When you place, I've actually there was a new research has come out that says that people bond more quickly and more deeply over a game than they do in any other social context.
Yeah, I read that, and you got people that don't like each other. They actually come together because they work together on a team through a game. So
yeah,
there's that collaboration that creates that bond.
Yeah. So, I mean, to be involved with something that has that sort of power, it's important. Sure, we're not doctors. Like, sure, I'm not a saving children in Africa, you know, but what I do is important. And what I do is, you know, I create an experience, help create an experience for somebody who may really need that experience.
I agree. I think that's part of what you know, creating the content and this, just doing podcasts, because this is a labor of love, regardless of whatever.
Yeah, definitely.
You're not going to make a living off of this money.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and why we do this, because the community is awesome and we want to see an awesome community, and this is how you nurture it.
Yeah. And is that a baby I hear in the background, or a kid?
It could be the neighbors.
Oh, okay. You don't have any children?
I don't have any children. Luckily.
Cool. What are you going to pass on to your kids? Like, when and if you have them?
Pass on meaning from magic or just in general?
Well, like your nerdiness. You mentioned you seem to have gotten a lot of your artiness and your nerdiness from your parents. Are you excited about having that sort of that same effect on your children?
Yeah, I definitely am. I mean, I want to teach them it's all right to be a nerd. And you could actually be cool as being a nerd. Like, being a nerd and being cool is not mutually exclusive. It's like, I really think people need to embrace who you are. And the same with my kids. I want to teach them to embrace who they are, whatever it may have to be. Just be the best of whatever it is that you want to be. And, you know, I want to nurture them however it may be. Give them an open slate. Give them some nudging in the right direction. But pretty much nurture whatever it is, because everybody's got their own story to tell, and it's not your story. I think too many parents try to inflict what they wanted in their own lives on their kids, and I just think that's unfair. So that's something I particularly will not go down, but I want to teach my kid to be all that they can be, because when you believe in yourself and you do what you feel is right, it's powerful. Like, you could do a lot, and that's what I want to pass on to my kids, is that you could do whatever you want to do. You could do it right, get paid, make a living, and impact the world positively.
Agreed. And that's what I hope. I mean, that's also like a good reason why I do what I do, is because I want my children to know that they can follow their passions too. Like, it's okay. You don't have to go to I know that you went to school for business, but you don't have to like go to school for business and then join the business world and then do this thing because people think that you should do it. You should be able to live your life how you want.
Yeah, and there's some... I mean, I don't know who says the cliche, but you can make a living doing whatever it is that you love, and it's the truth. You may not get paid what you want to, but at a certain point, you become a master. You do your 10,000 hours of it or whatever, and you become a master at it, and someone will pay you for that. Depending on what it is, it could be enough to make a living, it could not be, or you could supplement it other ways. But people that do what they like doing, even if it does not pay enough, they have a much better life. Then you're getting paid well, but you're grinding through life. It's like, I admire what you're doing with the game shop. Like, you know, you're taking the bull by the horn, saying this is gonna make me feel better as a person. You feel you're supporting your family, it seems like, and it's all coming together. So my advice to anybody out there is, do what you love and don't worry about the paycheck, because the paycheck will be there.
Agreed. Well, I don't know what we can even talk about that'll top that. I think that's a great place to wrap it up.
Sounds good. It was a pleasure being here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being on. And so my listeners know, it sounds a bit different this time because I'm using a brand new mic. That I pulled out of the case for the first time. It actually is. I'd love to know what you think about it, because it's, I'm trying to fine tune it. It's much more sensitive than my Marcel. You're probably familiar with Shure SM58s.
Yes.
Yep. Those are the two mics that I use, and this one seems so much more sensitive.
Condenser.
I think so. I know it's a studio. It's a professional MXL 990.
Okay.
But I know it's Phantom Powered 2 and all this stuff. So it's active. What's the term, active and passive, right?
Yeah. So yes, you probably do got a condenser. You need to have Phantom Power for it to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's most likely a condenser.
Okay. As opposed to Shure's, which are
passive, which you don't need to have Phantom Power for the Shure's.
Okay, yeah, I didn't think so. Yeah. So, well, that was some interesting mic talk. Anyway,
We're meddling you on the mics. You got to know this if you want to do podcasting. Trust me, if you got a bad mic, it's not going to work right.
True dat. And how do you... Okay, so I guess I'll one last question, Marcel. You have a great setup for your podcasting. Why do you tolerate your other castmates not having the same?
They actually got decent mics. We got
really good. Okay.
Is just their acoustics of the room. That's okay. what I boiled it down to. They got that in the internet connection that we got them decent mics. Mics should be working and crisp, but it's just the room. If we got them into a studio, I bet they'd sound pretty good. But it's something we're working on, and it's a pain in my ass because I'm very, very meticulous towards quality that I want, but I've accepted and understand that the barrier for podcasts is a little bit lower. And because it's such
a little bit lower, a little bit lower.
But there's casts like Spike Feed. I was on the Spike Feed, and they have a high production quality. And what they do is they record on, everyone records to their own computer and then puts it together, which is something I want to play with. It's going to add time to the production time. So I'm going to try it, but I don't think it will work. I could barely squeeze out editing the cast as it is in my schedule. So we'll see if that happens.
So they record remotely and then they have everybody send the file, or how do they do that?
Yeah, the Spike Feed, everyone's records remotely and they send it. There's a syncing in that they do and they just match it up.
Oh man, that sounds like I've done multicam video shoots, and I've had them where they went great. We had a head slate, a tail slate, like, and everything lined up perfectly. And then I've had ones that were like camera B cut at some point to change the battery, and then everything was off. Yeah, and I would never even want to run the risk of that. So that's why I record on I have Skype set up on a separate computer, and it records into my mixer, and my mixer goes to my computer.
Ah.
So anyway, that's a lot of technical mumbo jumbo for you. All right, Marcel.
Yeah, what we do.
Yeah, if they wanted to find you, where could they find you? If my listeners wanted to find you.
The best place you can find me is on Twitter. It's MarcelMTG. I'm on Facebook, other places, but I really don't check that.
Okay.
So if you want to contact me on Twitter. You can find me on Brainstorm Brewery. That's on GatheringMagic.com. You find us there first week, but then the week later, you can find us on Brainstorm Brewery. And we'll be going back to MTG Cast now that the fiasco that went on over there has been corrected.
So, yeah, it sounds like it's settling down anyway.
Yeah, so it looks like MTG Cast will be another home for Brainstorm Brewery. So that's where you can find me at. I'm going to Tyrone. He does MTG Brainstorm, a podcast that we're talking about.
That's who I was thinking of originally. When I first, before I knew who was who in the podcast world, I listened to Tyrone's podcast.
Uh-huh.
And you sound a lot like Tyrone.
Yeah, we call each other the Smooth Brothers. We're going to start a podcast for KYT. He wants us to get on Monitor Fries. Like, we need that. So we're going to do that once my busy season cuts down.
Don't do it. The pay is terrible.
I know. I seen the contract.
And you got to work for KYT. Who really wants to do that?
I know. I'd use that contract as toilet paper. That's what I say to authority.
Yeah, and that Kyle, oh, man. His editing, don't let him edit your stuff. Anyway. All right, Marcel. Well, thank you very much, and you have a great evening.
Well, thank you. Have a good one. Of the Mighty Souls of Mischief Crew. I'm chilling with my man Festo, my man A-Bless, and my man Bo. You know, he's dope. And right now, you know, we're just maxing in the studio. We're hailing from East Oakland, California, and sometimes it gets a little hectic out there. Welcome back.
Once again, my name is Matt Mendoza, and you have been listening to Across the Table 26 with my guest, Marcel White. This episode inspired me, and I want to know. In my podcast, I talk a lot about being a nerd. I grew up as a nerd. I was picked on as a nerd, and I've kind of come to embrace it. But I always have this nagging sort of suspicion that it's really nothing that should be embraced. I mean, we're all just ourselves, right? So my question is being a nerd, is that just an outdated label? Should I spend as much time on my podcast, concerned about people being nerds and how it's perceived by the rest of the world, and or what? I appreciate all answers because I'm obviously trying to figure this all out myself. Once again, thank you for listening. As always, you can send me any feedback on Twitter at Matt Mendoza or on email at acrossthetablepod@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at Across the Table Podcast, or you can follow the cast on Twitter at Across the Cast. As well, you can find us on manadeprived.com or on iTunes. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you have a great day.